Infinite Creators Podcast. For this week's show, I have a man called Patsy McGonigal. And Patsy has been in my life from the age of maybe 7 or 8 when I started competing in athletics in the Donegal Primary School Championships. And he was always a very loud character in the sense that he'd stand out in the crowd. And not because he was shouting or anything like that, but because he just had this presence about him. And that got me to a place of actually joining his athletic club and competing with the club on a county, a province, and national level. And through that experience, I met many people. I had many opportunities. It was a great community because you got to compete in so many events. There was so much on throughout the calendar year, and no other sport offered that. You know, it got to bring you around loads of different places, and the thing about it was always a different event. It was an event in a different location every year in the cross country, and you just had so much fun. You know, some of the best memories I have are through that experience, and the best friends that I've met too, you know, they've come through that as well. And it's just a really friendly community. And, you know, I've always been inspired by Patsy. So I would really like to have this conversation with him now and really hear about his journey and where he came from and how it brought him to this place in life. And I hope you enjoy. And if you are enjoying, please press subscribe and you'll get a notification with every new episode release. Thank you.
Okay.
Patsy McGonigal, how are you?
Good, Ryan. Good. Great to see you again. Good to see you. It's been lovely. We're here in Inch, down in, well, not Inch Road, down in Burnfoot, in your home place. So I've actually been down here before. So I kind of knew where you lived. So I'm glad to see you.
Me too. Gee, I can't remember the last time I saw you, but to be honest, you haven't changed a bit. You know, you're still keeping well, still keeping fit.
Not keeping fit really much, but I'm. I think the last time me and you had contact was you were in London and we were on the phone to each other or something. You were with somebody that knew me and we connected then. Sure, look, you never lose a connection, you know. Mm-hmm. You never lose it.
No. You've been a huge influence in my life. And, you know, when I thought about doing this podcast, you're one of the ones top the list. It's like, I'd love to get you on because, like, what you've done in athletics and just in Donegal in general is just, it's so inspirational. And, like, I feel like your story could inspire so many kids, young adults, whoever into sports, you know. So
you don't actually set out to do that, but it's probably one's nature, you know, that you actually end up, you know, because you're so engaged that you bring people with you, you know. And of course, you were with a group that was a very talented group, and we had great fun together and great success. And you were growing up at the time, and it probably, if more young fellas were in that situation, they would be better for it. You know, it was just a wild positive environment that you were in at Finn Valley in your years growing up. And you know, you were coming out of Tubin, out of national school in Tubin, and that school was brilliant for us. And all down to, of course, Manus O'Donnell, who was a teacher. And Manus was, you know, to be honest, Manus was, he was a fucking, they don't make teachers like him anymore. You know, he was a community man. He was a teacher. He was a leader. He was everything, and he had great enthusiasm, and that worked with me. And then he used to introduce all you kids from Tubin National School down here where you're from. And sure, there were so many of them had success. You know,
Manus O'Donnell is an amazing man.
Amazing.
That man, when I was at school, he had me in every sport. There wasn't a sport that I didn't play, and that was hurling, football, soccer, handball, you know, and running as well.
Yeah.
So I read about him, and I think it was, is that the same Manus O'Donnell that I read about in the book, or was that a different Manus O'Donnell?
No, there was a Manus O'Donnell who was a teacher locally in Balbuffet when I started the athletics.
Yeah.
And Manus became the first secretary. He's he's still alive, but he was a local principal in a school, and he engaged in the athletics in the early days, which was unusual, you know, because he had no background or anything, and that was a different Manus O'Donnell. He was a Gidore man.
Yes.
Manus O'Donnell that you know and I know down here was, I think, a Dublin man.
Yeah, I was surprised. It's like it couldn't be the same Manus, you know, because I seen a photo, but it's like sometimes people have longer hair, you know, in the days. Back to the Manus that we know, that man, like what he done for our school, I always felt very lucky because I seen so many other primary schools that were no involvement in sport.
No, even,
like at the time, there's other local schools, and it was just like there was very little.
Yeah, well, you see, that was a big thing for me, you know. I mean, it's a story in itself, you know. Primary schools in Donegal and engaging them and getting them on board, and that was never straightforward. Like, and you were introduced in athletics way back 50 years ago, plus more 50 years ago now. You were introduced in athletics, and you know, there was absolutely no history of any engagement, and so I didn't see it as a problem, you know, but it was problematic, you know, getting people involved. But look, they engage bit by bit by bit by bit, and there's, I think, 80 or 90 schools now totally engaged throughout the county. And that was a great achievement to get all those schools involved. And they're involved in cross country, they're involved in sports hall, they're involved in track and field. And the track and field day at Finn Valley is the biggest thing in athletics in Donegal now. And, you know, if you get a medal at the school sports finals in May at Finn Valley, you're doing darn well, you know, you're really good. So, and many of the kids that engaged and got involved in that, and they've all, you know, they've done well in other sports as well, you know, they've just gone on. Athletics was a good grounding for them, as well as other stuff, and now they've gone on to do other sports. So that's grand as well, you know. I wasn't in this modern thing of blocking people doing other sports, because, you know, that's going on a bit now, and that's happening a lot, which I really resent. The Gaelic are big at it, you know. They're forming these academies. They're blocking young kids from doing other sports at a young age, and that's total nonsense, you know. Some of the soccer guys are at it too. So, you know, my theory is that they should do good at sports, and then they'll figure it out themselves, you know.
Yeah.
But they don't. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. But anyway, that was it. So that's how we got involved. Ryan, that's how we got involved. You got involved in athletics through Manus in the school, and that's how you got to know me.
Yep. Them days, I remember up in Fun Valley, like they were, that was like my school, what we call it, school tour day. Like, it was just such a big buzz, and the sun was out, and there was so many kids that it was so competitive, because the track was only an 8-lane track, but there was about 100 people on the starting line, you know. So it was like there was a lot of, like, how would you say, like, nerves, but such a buzz.
Well, you had to have the nerves, you know, but you were good, you were tough. I mean, you'll never forget one of the All-Irelands in Rust ever. I mean, holy Jesus! I don't know where you came out of that day, sir, through the trees, and I couldn't believe it that you were going to win it. And of course, you had a good team, but on that particular day, that was a standout one, because we weren't talking about you winning the All Ireland's good into it, but by Jesus, you came out of it and you won it, and it was memorable. Like, it was really memorable, and yuck, you had a whole lot of different achievements, but that was. That was kind of the biggest in the year early as a youngster, you know. So basically, that was a big one. You had a good attitude for it. Now, I have to say, and I'm not bullshitting you. You had a good attitude for it. You were competitive. That's probably the modern way to explain it, you know.
I definitely am competitive. There's a part of me that really loves to get out there and compete. But when I look back at that time, you know, I didn't get off to the best start that year. I was fourth in the Donegal Championships.
Right.
And then I came through the Ulsters. But in the All-Ireland, the reason I won that race was because of you, whether you know that or not.
Right.
Like, because I remember coming around do you remember down the hill? There was like a bend.
I remember it.
And the next thing I could hear this roaring, you were scared, you know, you're just roaring like fuck at the beard. I was like, holy fuck, I better get going. And I think I was in the seventh at that time.
Scared of loving Jesus. Fuck,
you know, and then I just was right, I better fucking push. And then I came out of that there. But if I didn't have you in that corner, Patsy, like,
well,
I would not have won that race.
Well, I used to cover the ground, in fairness. I used to cover the ground, and I was good at that. You know, I was good at getting young fellas the best out of them and getting boys and girls all my life. You know, that was up until recently, till I kind of stepped back a bit. But I always was good at psychology and motivation and all that. And indeed, even, you know, I spent about 5 years with training Donegal, the senior Gaelic team, you know, and that was kind of a big part of it too. Just then was just my motivation, you know, just, you know, getting boys freaking riled up. And I managed a few senior Gaelic teams as well, and I used to drive them out, you know. You know, you'd wonder, do you need to open the door or not? I was just like, they were ready to play. It was just something. It was in my head, and I was lucky enough to be able to get it out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always enthused, and, you know, I couldn't see us ever getting beat and just doing, you know. But that was just kind of a trait that I had, and I used it big time.
Because when I think of you, I think of motivation. That's what I think when I think about you, you know, when I see what you've done,
aye.
Not just for like the athletes, but for yourself too in life, you know.
Aye. Well,
you've achieved
that. I was lucky. I was lucky, you know. I was blessed, you know, is the best way to put it. And I'm well appreciative of the opportunities that I either created or that happened for me, you know. For example, you know, just going back on my story, like, I mean, I went to local primary school in Balbuffet, and from there I headed to St. Columb's College in Derry. I was a boarder in St. Columb's College. That was tough. That was really tough for a young fella, a young Donegal fella. I was shy, believe it or not. And people never, ever believed that of me, that I was so shy. And because now I can fucking bat it out, you know. But then I was shy, and I went to boarding school. That toughened me up. It was a tough environment, but boarding schools in Ireland back in the 60s were tough environments, so I'm not making any case for myself. It was tough for everybody, and it made me. I left from there. I went to England. I went to Birmingham. And there was this system in England where my real ambition was to be an army officer. I knew that Irish language would be a big issue. I loved the Irish language, and I would have went to Gaelta and spoken fluently speaking it then at that stage. But for some reason, I didn't get into the army as an army officer, you know, cadet like, and that kind of blew me out a bit, you know. And my father was an army officer, you see, and so basically that probably obviously influenced me. But that didn't happen. And then my mother, she was the woman that made the move. She weren't going to hang about, I know, in our house. So she put me out. Birmingham was my next stop. And I was a kind of an assistant help teacher in a school in the middle of Birmingham, underneath the cathedral. They're all Irish kids. They were all Irish. I can't remember anybody else at that. It was a primary school. I was helping a teacher. It was the way to get into the system. And I was helping this teacher, and his name was Connolly. I remember it well. And it was a school during the day. It was an Irish dance hall at night, and I lived in Birmingham. And I was still a bit homesick, you know. When I was at boarding school, I was homesick a lot. Even in Birmingham, I was homesick a lot. But I got through that. And then I went for an interview down to St. Mary's University College in London and Twickenham. And that was regarded as a big deal, you know, to get in there. And I got in there nearly unknowns to myself, in the sense that I didn't appreciate how big a deal it was. But that set me up. And then I came back. Well, a lot of things happened in the meantime, but I eventually came back to Ireland. But I got married when I was about 19, and still a student, and still in London, and still working at night sometimes, and still running, and running twice a day sometimes. So I kind of was full on, like, you know, even then. And so, But I was lucky to get into St. Mary's, and it was tough because we had a baby, and I was trying to balance all that out. And that there was so much learning, you know, and toughening me up, you know, by, you know, you can imagine being a student, you can imagine you're 19, 20 years of age, you're over in London, you're studying, you're on the athletics team, you're training hard, you're doing all this, and you still have to get money. And I used to work in a bakery at the weekend, Pakistani bakery. None of the Pakistani boys spoke any English, so we didn't obviously knew any Pakistani. But you know, one of the funny stories of working in the Pakistani bakery was at night, at the weekends, was that, you know, we were growing up, there was no pastries, there was no cream. But the first night I came in, I went into the bakery, and a funny story really, in Twickenham or somewhere around that area, I seen all this cream. And Jesus, I loaded on cream, man. I loaded up on cream. And I was creamed out, man. And by about 3 in the morning, like, I was sick as a dog. Like, I wasn't well for 3 days. And, you know, because it was like, as an original child in the sweet shop, you know. And but anyway, I learned very quick, you know what I mean? But and I used to do things like, I was a postman at Christmas and all that kind of stuff, you know. And then we would come home at Christmas. I came home and all that stuff. So that was it. But and then Rosie getting pregnant would have been a big issue then back in Ireland in the 1960s. You know, that would have been frowned upon. It would have been this and that and other. So I had to deal with that. So, you know, when your family would have had issues with dealing with it, you know, because Ireland was a different place, absolutely unbelievably different place back then. And but it made me then eventually who I was. And as I go through this, and then I came back to Ireland, and I got married when I was a student. I got married, gathered up all the students, and I had a wedding, and so that was grand. And the priest in the college, he married us, so that was grand. That was that job done. So basically, came back to Glentis, taught 2 years in Glentis, 1969 to 1971. Glentis was class. Because it was, people were lovely. It was West Donegal pretty much. And it was, you know, it was, and I was beginning to get athletics moving. And I was able to run, and I was able to run in a beautiful place. And as I say, the people were, we were home. I was home in Ireland. And I was a teacher. I was a physical education teacher. So I had a good job. So I was lucky. And then, and I'll just keep chatting because then you'll come back to me. And then basically, then I thought that I was happy. I would have stayed in Glentis for the rest of my life. Again, only for my mother, God rest her. She was actually a chemist, and she was from Inishowen. She was an Inishowen woman. Both my father and mother were from Inishowen. My father was from Ballyliffin, and my mother was from Rossini. And she was a chemist, and. That's a story in itself too. How did she become a chemist? You asked me about that because it kind of sums up the period that in which she lived in the 40s. So basically, I went from there to in Glentis, and then I went back to England to study again, and I spent another year studying, and I left Rosalind at home, and I got a flat in Stranorlar. We had another child at that stage, Connor, when we were in Glentis, and then we had another boy. Then so Rosalind had 3 kids to look after, and and 72 and 71. Well, Niall wasn't there, but Connor was there. So we had a flat in Stranorlar. I was in England, and again money was an issue, but luckily enough in London. There was a fella had a room. He got a wee room in the college. You know how nowadays people want to stay in the college. He was lucky. He got a room, and there was enough room in the room for me. I lay on the mat, and he had a couple of pillows. Gave me one of the pillows and one of the blankets. And you know this, I was happy as Larry on the floor, and I studied, and it was grand. And you know, I remember I tell a funny story again about times are tough, but that makes you too, because you know you go into a canteen in the college. You go into a canteen in a college and you join the queue, and you obviously got to pay when you get to the fucking pay desk. But I used to wait till the queue would be long and start eating at the end of the queue. I wouldn't really have my dinner yet by the time I got to the pay desk. So that was a trick that I used all the time. You know what I mean? Because I just kept fucking gobbling it up. And if it was, I had a big coat on me, put a couple of bits and pieces in my pockets. But that, I got through all that. So that was my post-grad year. And then, as I say, I was blessed, really blessed. The next move was brilliant for me because I ended up in what was then the regional college, became the LYIT, became as now the ATU. And that was a great environment to be in. A third level institution, half an hour down the road. And sure, geez, you couldn't get the bitten of it, you know. And I was a lecturer there and, you know, I was able to do this athletics thing, you know, outside of school, and that set me up, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's me into the 70s, you know.
Yes,
and,
yes,
and all that.
So I would like to go back to you as a kid, you know. So for you to become who you are today, what was your influence? Like, what was it that really gave you the inspiration to drive on to be who you are today?
I don't think you could point to any one thing, you know. I mean, I grew up in a very, you know, probably like yourself, in a country place, and you're running through the fields. You were, you know, you're out and about. My mother was working. My father was in the army away. So, you know, the community kind of reared you, you know, I went to a school outside the town. You walked a couple, 2 or 3 miles to the school. And you learned a lot on the move, on the road to school and on the way home from school, to be honest. And you were no hurry home. Mm-hmm. And that was life. You know, you knew you run to everybody's houses. People run to your house. And at the end of the day, that was Ireland back then. You know, it was just a different world. It was really, really, really a different world. And it was a great, great environment. It was a safe environment. And it was all of that. Now, you asked me the question, you know, what did I take out of that? We were kind of half-reared as well and in a showing, you know, because we would have been sent down for the summer for a couple of months to my granny's. And that was farm, that was going to the bog, that was running after sheep, that was, you know, all the things you would do, you know, on a farm and in a showing back in the 50s and 60s. I was born in 47. So basically, you know, I learned and have great memories of going down to stay with my granny, you know, and the thatched house, no electric. There was no electric in that part of it is shown back in the 50s. The houses got electrification about 56, 57. So you were sitting in a big hearth fire every night. All the people came in to visit. It was... To the modern generation, it's very hard to visualize, but I loved it. I fucking loved it. I loved the horses and the cart and the neighbors and the whole environment. I would say, God forgive me, if I ever get Alzheimer's, I'll always go back in my mind to the days I was in a showing, and I'll forget everything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It always stands out in me. Just you get wee flashes, you know, of... Mm-hmm. Part of your life. Now that was it. There were great people.
It's kind of like a simple life, isn't it?
Jesus, it was a simple life. It was simple food. It was simple life. It was, you know, making your granny making butter, and it was like, you know, the cows and the milk. You had your own milk. You had your own stuff. You had everything. You know, look, it was a totally, you know, it was a different world, and they grew lint and. But they thatched the houses, and you know, I liked it. I loved it. And then you could go down. There was a river, and you could go down. You could pitch in the river, and you know, that was great. That was great excitement. You know, there was a lot of things like that. But anyway, that was growing up. So that initial influence was big on me. I had the influence of my father. My father was a very good footballer, and he played for Ireland, and he played in the Olympics in 1948. And that was always hanging over me, you know, that thing. And then when I was 13 and a half, interestingly, you're just chatting again about what makes you, you know, what influences. Everything's influencing you. But one of the things, I joined the FCA when I was about 13 and a half. Now, you get to swear you were 17, and you were supposed to be 17, and that was the law. But I told them I was 17 and swore blind that I was 17. And then I was in the army then, and I was in Finner Camp. And that was great learning too, because you had a rifle and you were firing a gun, and you were learning all the discipline of army life. And that formed a big part of my life going forward as well, because I stayed in the army and the FCA, and then when the troubles broke out, I was very involved in duties and all that with the army. And you know, I loved the team and the relationship fellas had in the army, where, you know, the boys didn't let you down. You know, there was learning things like that. And loyalty became a wild big thing with me in later years. You know, you say what made me. I was wild for loyalty. I was wild. People had to be loyal, and I was loyal to them. You know, I would do anything for them, and I expected them, you know, naively at times to do, you know, to be on board with me, you know. So, and you know, people say, you know, why did I do so well? And I figured it out, you know, in later years. When you're doing all this, you don't figure it out, Ryan. But what I figured out is I was mad enthusiastic for what I was doing. My enthusiasm and my energy levels. And I didn't drink. You know, this thing. I actually probably... I was introduced to drink, kind of, believe it or not, when I was in my late 30s. And I say introduced to drink mainly because I got involved with the Gaelic football. And, you know, the guys used to go to the pub. And when you were managing the team, I kind of used to think to Sunday, you know, geez, I'll get into the pub because I need to figure out what's going on with these boys. And that was my memory of when I used to start to drink. And I think, not that I ever drink, never became a problem as much such, but it was just that, you know, I always felt and still say, if you could live your life without drink and be relaxed and enjoy company and enjoy the environment that you're in and you don't need drink, that's a big advantage. That's a massive, massive advantage. And I say that as someone who now takes a drink. But often, anybody that tells me they don't drink, I say, well, fucking fair play to you. Fair fucking play to you, because that's a big plus. And you don't know it, but that's a big plus. Serious big plus in your life and in your day-to-day life and in your mental attitude to life, because you know, and it's so relevant now. And I've learned through my own experience that if you take drink and take too much drink, the next day is bollocks. The day that you're living through that, even that night, it influences too much. It's depressing, and everybody tells you it's depressing, but you need to be in that situation and be depressed to know how fucking depressing it is. And as a result, people make decisions about their life that are serious. And you know, so it is, and it's so readily available now. It wasn't so much years ago. It's readily available now. And now you see, which I don't understand, there's drugs and everything, and I mean, I had never experience of any of that, but I can imagine young people have a big challenge in their own heads now, you know. So therefore, my game is a lifesaver. You know, getting involved in sport, getting involved in activity, getting involved with people that are positive and taking responsibility and moving on is key, absolutely key. And that's my gospel, you know, that's me, that's my gospel for today kind of thing, always. I go into schools, you know, and I speak, and I'm always driving an agenda where take responsibility. I mean, don't go with the stupid heads, because there's no want of stupid heads out there. And some of them are your friends, but you just don't need to fucking jump on the river along with them. So basically, that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So basically, you know, it's like, my thing that stood to me too, Ryan, and you have experienced this. I called it as it was when I was coaching athletes up to Olympic level. and I was involved with five Olympic Games, which is rather unique. And you know, basically, at Olympic level, at world level, European level, I just called it. I just called it. If an athlete fucked up, for want of a better word, you tell them. You mightn't just tell them that fucking minute when they're crying and they're fucking sitting there depressed, but you tell them. You need to tell them where they stand, you know, because they will make excuses. They would fucking make excuses, you know. And one of the things I found was, you know, I even had boys. I remember a fella in we were in Moscow or somewhere, and a boy, he came out, he had his fucking story ready before ever he came out, like, but why he didn't perform. And I'm listening to him and I'm thinking, holy Jesus. And the next thing, he realised he qualified for the next round. Of course, he had a different story then. This is for the media, you know.
Yes.
And I just take him apart. You just take them apart. And, you know, you get into trouble sometimes for doing that because people don't want to be told straight up. But the advantage in being straight and telling it as it is, when they do well and you tell them they've done well and you fucking, you're all over them and you're giving them an out-out punch and you're saying, I'm fucking proud of you, that means something because you're the fellow that's going to tell them different if it is different. Mm-hmm. So that worked for me, you know. I was straight up, and that worked with my own athletes, the loyalty, the working together, the team element, all that stuff worked for me in the club and by extension with Ireland. So and you asked me and I didn't really answer your question directly, but probably what influenced me, it was bit by bit stuff, you know. It was experiences. It was just like the army. It was boarding school. It was going to England. It was my girlfriend getting pregnant. It was dealing with all that stuff, you know. And it was, you know, so many things, and you put them all together, and this is you now. And then you're ready to jump off then with this new thing called athletics, and inverted commas, obviously.
But but with all that athletics not being a thing in Donegal, probably not that common in Ireland at the time. Like,
no.
What gave you the spark to follow athletics?
Right. How did I get involved? In St. Columb's College, a new priest came on the staff, and he had an athletics background, and he was just out of Maynooth, and one of his first appointments was as a teacher in the school, and he introduced athletics. That was a lifesaver for me. That was an absolute fucking lifesaver because I was introduced to athletics and I ran with the opportunity that gave me. Mm-hmm. I took the opportunity. And again, that's a message I keep driving out. You know, opportunities will come. Now, you've got to make your mind up. Are you going to sit in your ass and look out the window at the rain coming down the window? Or are you going to have a go at it? Now, it'll not always work. But are you going to have a go at the opportunity? And telling my story, I went with the opportunity, and that opportunity brought me eventually to the Olympic Games, brought me into a senior lecturing job, it brought me into a settled environment, a good lifestyle, and a good, you know, home and everything. And back in Ireland, back in my home place. But that priest, I told him no amount of times, he's no longer a priest, but I told him many, many, many times, listen, sir, I'm coming to you now to tell you, you give me an opportunity, and I took it, and I'm very grateful, you know. And again, there's another lesson, you know, be grateful, be appreciative, tell people, because people like me, you know, they go out and they're helping people, and you're driving people, and you're involving people, and you're making their life for them, you know. But rarely does they come back and say thanks, you know. They don't. They miss that aspect of it. And when it does happen, you do appreciate it. You absolutely do. But you know who's who. You know, you're well able to figure out who's who, and you know what. It's a lot to do with how people are rare too. You know, I mean, you know, do they take it for granted, or do they appreciate people helping them? And a lot of that is down to their family background, to be honest, you know. But anyway, that's it. Now, the priest gave me the opportunity, and that's where I came into the athletics.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, It sounds like in this situation that you're the priest and I'm you, because you've gave me an opportunity as a youngster. And you know what? It wasn't all about like running to win, even though I loved that thrill and that buzz. Like the community in itself, and like the amount of events that we went, like athletics is amazing for that. And there isn't another sport that I was involved in that gave me that opportunity, which was like, you know, you're away nearly every second or third weekend for maybe 2 days, and it's great crack, like, you know. Not as one huge benefit of athletics, you know. It's very diverse as well.
It is diverse, and it was a mixed sport. You know, at that time Gaelic was just a boy sport, and all of that, and soccer, you know. Mm-hmm. it was a mixed sex sport, and that was no harm. And basically you took everybody. You had everybody on board, you know, your brothers and sisters, everybody was going. So, you know, it was good, you know. It was, you know, I did things as well, you know, that not very many did, you know. I used to load up buses and go to England and Gateshead and all that, you know, and everywhere, you know. I tell a story about, you know, now again, I wouldn't get away. I was game to take chances, you know, and fucking, you know, and if I booked 20 or 30 into a hotel, I could get 50 or 60 into that hotel, you know, no bother, mm-hmm. and pay for 30. Because it was easier on the families, like from a payment point of view. And, and if I remember going to Gateshead, went to Gateshead on a 50-seater bus. I remember sitting outside the Bud Hall and Battle Buffet, and there were 74 at that stage in the bus. And the driver says, if I'm stopped, that's me. I'll be arrested. The bus will be left at the side of the road. What are you going to do with the weigh-ins? I said, I don't know, sure, but we have to get the boat in Larne. I don't know what they mean first. So we got the boat. And again, believe it or not, you know, people now would look down on me for doing this, you know, but they wouldn't understand the motivation. I would have booked on that boat and on many, many boats. You know, you were on them, out of Liverpool, out of Larne, out of Dublin, or wherever we were going, over to England. You just wouldn't even know it, maybe. I might only booked about 20 or 30s, you know. But yous were brilliant at sneaking on boats. You know, I remember Liverpool, we got to Liverpool one night, and there's a big security check. And of course, Connor and the boys were all on the boat too, and they knew the score and all that. Everybody nearly knew the score. Yous all knew the score without ever me explaining it to yous. And it was a count me off the bus job, and put us into a place, and then take us back out again, because it was the troubles were in the north and there was a whole handling. So I seen this is tight now. We're going to be in bother here, because a full bus, maybe 20 of them booked. So where the Jesus is this going to go? I remember first we got ones out the back door. We got ones lying on the floor, and we got through the big time. We got through the security, and then they put us into a hut. And I thought, holy shit, how am I going to get them out of the hut now? But the young ones, hey, we got them. It was pressure, like, but we got them. I remember that was probably the tightest I got, you know, to get people off and on boats. But we did it. And why did we do it? Because families didn't have the money to spend to pay the full whack and pay B&B hotels. We were staying in hotels. We were on boats. We were in buses. So if you're able to half the fare, you know, by tutoring about, you know, I'll tell you even a worse thing I've done. We're in England and have booked in maybe 40 on this occasion with a big, big squad. And the first night, that's grand. Then we compete, and we're competing in Manchester or somewhere. And then I remember I got cheeky, and I remember thinking, oh, shit, I'll book out 20 of them now. And I booked out 20 of them, saying they were going home. And I sent you out to walk around the car park. Maybe you weren't on that trip to walk around the car. Got out and walk around the car park there a while and sneak back in then after a while. And I booked you out. And they're still, I made it even less in the hotel, you know, just to save money, you know. So it was all myself and pal, they would have a couple of pints there, and everything would be grand, like. And you used to go stone mad around the hotel. Which that was part of the crack too.
It was.
Ah, Jesus, you know.
You're a great man for taking risks, you know.
I was.
And I think there's value in taking risks, you know. If you're not willing to take a risk, then there's you're not willing to step into that fear, whatever it may be that's holding you back, you're not going to step into that version of yourself, you know, that potential that you have, you know?
Well, you know, you actually, that's right. I took risks, you know, it was my nature to take risks in all areas of life. And it actually worked, you know, it worked for me. Now, people form a poor opinion of me at times, and but I didn't really give a shit, like, because I knew my motivation was different from where they were coming from. So I didn't, and it was all to do with progressing and getting on and giving opportunities.
Yeah.
Anyway, but one of the things, and you mentioned the word, one of the things that drove me unbelievably was fear. Absolute fear. You know, when a season would start, and I explained this to somebody recently, when a season would start, for weeks at the start of the season, I would be scared shitless that we weren't going to be as good as we were the year before, you know. And then I would go on to overdrive then to make sure that wasn't going to happen. But fear, absolute fear, drove me, because I didn't want it to be any less than it was the year before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I lost the fear in recent times, it's not as good, you know what I mean? It's just not as good. But I had to, you know, I'm in a situation now where I've backed off a wee bit, and I can see it different. It's the best way to describe it. And but it has to happen, you know. I have to prepare for, I'm 76 years of age. I have to prepare that I'm not going to be there much longer. So basically, this thing has to go on, because so often, you see a fellow like me who has driven a club, who has driven a situation, and then he's gone and it just goes bang, you know. So I'm trying, you know, without saying anything, just moving back, you know. But I'm still very on the ball every day, but it's just, you know, I'm doing it differently.
How does that feel now, you know, being involved with something that you built for most of your life and now potentially stepping back, or, you know, letting go?
I worried about that. That's a good question, Ryan. That's a good question. That change, what do you call it? Change is hard to manage, you know. It's really hard to manage. I find it very difficult. But I've got the athletics end of it kind of moved on, and I just need to try and the centre, you know, the Thin Valley Centre, which has been an absolute brilliant success story. I'm still rolling it, but I have it well organised and all the rest of it. But, and I'm trying to put it in a position where it can't be fucked up, if you know what I mean. So basically, you know, that keeps my head sane, you know, because you're chatting to a fella who might wake at 3 and 4 in the morning with this problem. And I'm sure any man that's in business or anything, it was the same with the athletics, the same with everything, even still. I would even be getting more anxious now, you know, waking up thinking, you know, in the dark of night, that's the worst time to start the problems in your head, you know, and the stress and all that. And how, because once you're out of the bed in the morning, it's not as big a problem anymore, you know. So, and this is just not, I'm sure this is, you think you're the only one in that situation, but everybody at some time is going to be in this position. You know, you're waking up in the middle with your problem, and you haven't anticipated the problem about what's going on in your life. And it's a massive problem when you're lying in the darkness of night. But when you get up in the morning and get up and get moving and get going and get your head into gear, it just may not be as big a problem. And, you know, again, you have to self-discover that, you know. And I have discovered that. But that's not no good at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? So that's the difference, you know. You can have the fucking problem at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you know it's going to go away when you get up. But fuck it, it's 2 o'clock in the morning still, you know. So that's it.
Fair play. So with Thin Valley, what would you like to see? How would you like to see it continue?
Oh, I'd like to see it being as positive as it is and being as engaging as it is. And it's massively engaging, you know. The swimming pool was a big add-on. I fought hard for the swimming pool. And then, you know, the Finn Valley Centre, if you look at it now, it's a grand spot and it's got all the facilities. It's got everything going for it. It's going well. It's positive. It's actually employing close to 60 people now. And it's a lot of them are part-time. Mm-hmm. And so on. But you know, it's how would you put it? It's I developed it piece by piece by piece, you know. And, you know, I didn't go... That was always going to be a wild challenge, the actual centre, the athletic centre itself, because a lot of times what happens is people have a good going club, any sports club, and then they get a notion they're going to build this, they're going to build that, and then they take their eye off the ball, off the sport end of it, and it all the momentum goes towards the physical structure of building something. So I knew I knew not to fall into that thing. So I was able to manage driving the athletics and driving the development of the centre. And I'm proud of that fact, mm-hmm. because that's a big challenge, because that's 24 hours a day job, you know. And then in the middle of all that, I was managing Ireland all over the world. I was coming back, getting excited about young ones. I was supposed to be teaching and doing my job at Letterkenny. I was in the army sometimes, 24-hour duties. I was supposed to be rearing a family. I was lucky I had a good woman who stayed with me, because Jesus Christ, you know, I would explain about our relationship, you know, many, 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 many years and years and years. I might have been at home, but my fucking head wasn't at home, like.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, there could have been so many things going on in my direct family. And sure, I was thinking, right, Friday, right, Saturday, now that, what about that team? What about that young fella? What about her? What about this? What about that? And you're not going to be walking around, fucking walking into walls, man, thinking about that. So basically, you know, that was, I was fortunate in the woman that I married, and fortunate that she stayed. And I tell funny stories to you about that, because I assess that in my head. The modern Irish woman wouldn't have stayed with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rosie was from a generation, same as myself, where people stayed together, people got on with it. You couldn't have blamed a woman for leaving me, because, mm-hmm. you know, because that was life. But, and the modern woman wouldn't have put up with it, you know, because I was just out the door like a shot.
Mm.
You know, up and out, no way. You know, yeah. And you see, you can see that. You can see that as you look back into the generation before yours and beyond that. You know, it's just that people had a great, and maybe sometimes it wasn't the right thing to do to stay together, I'm sure, in relationships. But the reality is, it worked for me. It worked for me, and my family turned out grand, and they got on grand, and they're all fucking half normal, you know. So yeah, basically, yeah. It's grand.
Yeah.
So basically, that's good. Niall went to the States on a soccer scholarship. He was into soccer, did his athletics, surely he did his athletics, won all Ireland javelin and all that, but soccer was his thing. Got a soccer scholarship in Alabama. Connor again got medals in all Ireland in the high jump, played McCool's in Gaelic football, played for Donegal, both of them did, for minors, Donegal minors. Brendan again, he did athletics, got medals in the all Irelands. And then did fuck all after that, but they did very well for themselves living in Bulgaria. Anya, she did athletics, but she wasn't quite keen about it. I remember going to a high jump that she was doing very well on one time, and she was doing well, and somebody ran down the field and says, "Jesus, you're the girl. She's the only two left in that competition now, and she's getting on wild well." So I ran up, well excited, stood at the side to the competition. She told me to fuck off. In front of everybody, so I had to fuck off, like, you know. And I was so proud that she was in that, you know. So she shouted at me, "Fuck off, daddy!" Like,
I read that in the book. I had a good laugh,
you know. And then Aoife, you know, she just didn't bother, and she would be, you know, she played Gaelic football when she was younger, but she probably did a bit of athletics too, but I can't remember it. But anyway, that was the family. The family were being grand, and you know, the great thing about being loving on beyond all that, and things being held together, is the great crack out of your grandchildren, and I love that and that engagement. But no, so that was I don't know if that answers your last question, because I got lost there for a minute there, Ryan.
There's no right or wrong way to answer.
No.
I'm just trying to get an idea about your journey through athletics. And I think there's something to get to that point, though. You know, there was no athletics in Donegal. Where did that start for you? How did you bring it in? And what were the challenges that you faced along that way?
You had to face your own challenge, first of all. You had to have the courage to go out for a run. Now, believe it or not, that's very hard to understand in 2023. That back in my day, back in 1962, 63, 64, nobody went out for a run. Nobody. Not in the whole fucking county of Donegal. From Malin to fucking Bath.
Why was that?
Well, that was culture, you see. There was no engagement in sport, really, other than there was golf.
But let's say if you did go for a run, like...
Oh, well, this is the funny story I'm going to tell you. I came back from boarding school, and the odd day, I would walk about for hours and hours just getting the courage to have to go for a run. And I'll go for a run. And that was good round Balbuffet, and maybe I was 15, 16 years of age. That was something that would have been noted, like, did you see the young fella out running? Now, the funny story about that is an older man told me later years, he says, do you know what they were saying about you, Patsy? They were saying, Jesus, isn't it wild about that young man going to go by? His mother sent him away to school to be educated and spend good money on him. And look at him now. He's running around with no clothes and around Balbuffet. You know what I mean? And That was it. You know, geez, a pity about that young fella. And you know how now everybody goes out walking? No fucking walking. Nobody went walking. They didn't actually go walking. You know, you ask anybody. You know, people will listen to this and they'll say, fuck's sake, Patsy. I'm telling you, there was nobody went out walking. And if they went out walking like fast like they do now, that's a white coat job, like. that's definitely honest to God. That was Ireland back in the 60s. That definitely was Ireland. And then as years went on, then it kind of changed. But it was such a different place. And you know, I remember I even remember in the 70s, I had this fellow called John Gallagher. He was a teacher in the school. He was part of my successful team and won the county, won Ulster with him. He was one of the team. And I remember I met him on a Saturday in Balbuffet, one Saturday walking down the street. And I was asked, John, how's it going? And he was a Galway man, he was teaching Balbuffet. And I said, John, where are you going? You know where I'm going, Patsy? And this was still in the 70s. I'm going over to town to see if there's money about. In other words, depending on whether there was money about or not, he was going to go for a run. You know what I mean? It's fucking stupid, like.
Oh, Jesus.
This is a man who's an educated man. Like, and he still probably didn't have the courage to go out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Go out on his own for a run. And another thing, you know, that you wouldn't... I remember even my mother, God rest her, giving out to me. Everybody was going to devotion one night or something, or going to whatever, Mass, Lent or something. And I was coming down the street, running with a whole lot of girls. Oh, my mother was fucking... She couldn't get over this. This was the worst thing ever. The whole country's going to be chatting about you. Because I was out running with girls. You know, like, It was just a social attitude, you know.
Yeah. There still does be a bit of that, not to that extent, but it's like there's people who are caught up, you know, they're very judgmental, you know.
Aye.
And I know things have changed, like, but still exists a wee bit, you know.
Aye.
Where they have attitudes like that, or they'll judge you for whatever you do, you know.
Aye.
But
aye,
you have to break them walls down. You
have to break them down, and you have to get tough.
How did you do that?
That again is a very good question, Ryan, because it's personal to me as well. When you're younger, you are impacted by negativity, and you're impacted by people being judgmental, and your impact, and that can go on for quite some time. But as you get older, you just get fucking tougher. And then you experience so many situations yourself that, you know, you don't judge.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody should be judging, like, nobody should judge, you know. Everybody in small villages and communities in Ireland, judged everybody in the community and all. But I think now, maybe you'll tell me if I'm right or wrong, I think people are fucking wised up now. They've enough bother fucking looking after themselves without making, they might relate to it sometimes, but you know, like, there's so many aspects of life now in Ireland that has changed, that, you know, relationships and everything and the way people are living, that basically you can't be going around judging, like, holy shit, you know. And it's in every family. Every family's the same, like, every fucking family's the same, you know, like, you know, so you best not have an opinion about that. You just be charitable and be, that's it. Just get on with it.
For me, it's like, when I see people caught up in judgment, they don't realize it, like, but they're comparing themselves to someone else to make themselves feel better about themselves. And there's something that they're not happy about in themselves, you know.
Probably.
It's unfortunate, like, you know.
It's unfortunate, but you have to ignore it.
You do. It's like, I just had a station now, and like, I just try to not involve myself with it, you know.
Don't get involved in the conversation. No. Life's too short for that. Way too short. But you learn that, you know. You have to learn that. And you have to be impacted by it at some stage yourself, possibly.
Yeah.
And then you deal with that. So then you're better to deal with something else. So that's it. But, you know, it's just, you know, there's a couple of words that you could sum somebody like me up, you know. Took opportunities. I wasn't afraid to take a risk. You know, I wasn't, when it mattered, I wasn't impacted by negativity. I wasn't impacted by people saying, Jesus Christ, take your time, sir. Don't do this, don't do that. I fucking steamed on, you know. Assessed myself, didn't really listen, and thank Christ I didn't listen.
I like that about you. When we were away at the athletics events, you were always like, go on the fuck, you know. It's just don't hold back, don't let anyone hold you back, you know. You're really encouraging, like.
Definitely don't listen, don't be impacted by being caged. Well, look, it makes sense to be cagey about certain things, but you know, there's times in life you have to say to yourself, fuck it, I'm going to go for this, you know, I'm going to go for this. Now, it mightn't work, it could fuck me up, it could do this and that, but if you don't do it, you're not going to be happy either, like, you know.
Yeah, and that seems to have served you well, because...
Oh, it served me well.
Like, you've not just, you came home to Donegal, again, you started an athletics club, and then that progressed to international level.
Yeah.
You know, what was your, where did that journey start?
Well, the journey started, my first big appointment for Ireland would have been to go to the World Junior Under-20 Championships in Seoul, Korea. I was excited. The car probably didn't touch the ground going up the road. You know, I was just so excited. And I managed Ireland then a couple of years later in Lisbon. And then, but in between, you were doing other lesser things. But these were all World Championships. And then my teams were successful in Ireland. And I had a very strong, driven personality. I was in the middle of everything, you know. And I was this Donegal man who wasn't going to be put down too easy, you know. And I wasn't going to be walked over either. So I got onto national committees, and I had a fucking voice, you know. I wasn't one of these boys fucking sitting there sucking their thumb, you know. Of course, I fell out with boys, you know, and that's another story. Fucking threw the whole thing into complete disarray at one stage. But no, I was. You could say I was arrogant, possibly, but I was driven, in my opinion, for the right reasons, which was the sport. And I was defensive of my own athletes. And I fought for athletes. I fucking fought for athletes. They didn't need to be from Donegal. I mean, I fought for athletes everywhere. And athletes then appreciated that. You know, they knew I was going to fight for them. And I formed relationships with athletes that were competing for Ireland, whether they were in America, whether they were in Ireland, or wherever they were. I was in touch. And that was unusual back then. You know, now there's performance leads and there's all these kind of boys that are supposed to be, you know, but most of the time they're not. But I was in on that. I knew you had to be talking to people. You know, even when I had good teams winning nationals here at senior level, which was a massive breakthrough, you know, I was talking to some of those athletes every day, every freaking day. Every day. I wouldn't have missed a day. And I'd have been either training them, physically with them, or on the phone. And that's where my job worked, because I had a phone. No mobiles back then. So basically that worked. And then I went to the World Championships in Seville in 99. Again, it was a big one. You know, you were the best athletes in the world. These were the major appointments that I had. There was others. There were others, you know. I was in charge of the European cross-country teams. I was in charge of road teams in Japan. I was in all that places. But at the end of the day, these were the big ones. And then I managed every team at world level, pretty much an Olympic level, European level, for about 20 years after that, mm-hmm. up until 2017. You know, my last Olympics was Rio. Rio de Janeiro, and had Sydney and Athens. For the Athens Olympics, I only did the pre-camp. I went to Cyprus and we did the final training there. And then when all the athletes went into Athens, I went home. Mm-hmm. And then there was Beijing, and then there was London. London was great. What I loved about London was I was completely in charge, and I was able to bring the team into the college that I'd went to for the pre-games, you know. And London was brilliant. And then there was Rio. And then I was interviewed and appointed then for Tokyo. And the following year, 2017, the World Championships were in London. Again, that was brilliant and nice near home. My family were able to come and watch, because you never took your family to anything. Because you had to have full focus, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was the question everybody used to ask. They used to say to Rosalind, "Are you going, Rosalind?" And I'd think, "Oh, Jesus, don't be asking that question." anyway, because, you know what I mean? And obviously got used to it in the end of, like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
People were meant well, like, and I used to say, "Oh, for fuck's sake." But anyway, that was grand. I went to London in 2017, and I realised that the buzz was going, you know, the buzz, you know, I was...
When you say buzz...
Buzz, you know, as in, you know, the excitement, the enthusiasm. I wasn't impacted by the results of my athletes as it should have been. And yet, I had 3 more years to go to Tokyo, and I thought, I'm getting out of it. And I just got out of it. End story. So no, I then stepped down in 2017, and there you have it. You know, it took me a bit of time to get my head in gear about it all, but no, I was happy. Happy did it. I got fed up with the travel too. Massive amount of travel. You know, you see, not only the nature of the national team job would be, you know, you're going to major championships, you're going to pre-camps, you're going to training camps like at Easter and all these times in January and February, and you know, you're going to good warm weather places, like you're going to South Africa, you're going to Portugal, and it all was massively exciting, you know, when you were younger. Jesus, you were quite excited, and you were honoured, and you were privileged, and all those words that you should think. But as you got older and you'd done it time and time and time again, while they were all special, you were wearing down a bit, you know. But I still, when I hit the ground, I could do the job. I was good. I was good at what I did. And that's me saying that. Nobody else is going to say it to me. But I knew myself. I was good at it. And I was in control. And I was on the ball. And I had a good relationship with the team. And I had a bit of a personality too. So it doesn't do any harm, you know. Mm. And I was game ball to go for an odd pint if I had to go. And, you know, all that. And I got a wild kick out of just... athletes, you know, the positivity that they brought, you know, the fucking people that they were, you know, like, I mean, the people that they were, these were people running for Ireland, competing for Ireland, or whatever country, whether it was Ukraine, or whether it was Spain, or France, or whatever they were all brilliant, because they had dedicated their lives to achieving something big, mm-hmm. and they probably had put their life on hold, you know. They probably were at university and then they had got time off, so they're put, and you know, they were such positive people, and you couldn't be but inspired by them, you know. And therefore, by being inspired, you were living life with them. Mm. So if they were down, you were kind of You had to. You couldn't get down, but you felt it. You know, you felt it. So you had to. You had to be the boy that kept the head, you know, and you got to drive on to the next town, like as the man says, you know. All right, this didn't go. These championships didn't go. You've trained for 10 years for these championships. That hasn't worked. Fucking life's not over. Like,
mm-hmm.
we're not gonna. You know, we're just. You got to pick it up here. You just got to pick it up, and you got to whatever the relevant words were. I don't know what that would be. You couldn't even imagine. When you'd walk up to an athlete that hasn't performed, you wouldn't have a clue what your opening remark would be. It had to come natural.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't be planned. It had to be natural. You had to be natural. You couldn't be this boy that just got the job and he was walking about, like, you know what I mean? No, that wasn't my nature. But no.
You worked then with a lot of, I would say, like, big-name athletes in the sense that they achieved, you know, and one of them would have been Sonia Sullivan.
Mm.
You managed her in the 2000 Olympics.
Aye. I got that. Was a big one. I managed her in quite a few things, but I managed her at Europeans and everything. But obviously everybody will remember the Olympics, and that was a lovely night. That was a great night. I used to always say, you know, the opportunity that the priests and columns give me, that opportunity brought me to a stadium in Sydney with 120,000 people and an athlete that was going for gold in the Olympic Games, you know, and that this was me and this athlete, you know. I can remember how nervous I was walking from the village with her, just me and her. We were walking towards the warm-up track. I'll never forget it. It's, you know, I don't actually recall, and nowadays it kind of gives me, mind so busy doing other things, but, you know, that particular night always stood out. You know, me and her heads off from the village, everybody has left, everybody in Ireland, the world has stopped in Ireland, because this is massive, a girl that can possibly win the Olympic Games, and, you know, so we're heading. I brought her to the warm-up area. I had figured it out a day or two earlier. There was a couple of wee rooms underneath the stand, you know, and the Brits had taken two of the rooms for their massage people, you know, and they put up flags and stuff to take ownership of the two rooms. So I said, well, fuck the fucking Brits. I said, so I pulled all their stuff down, you know,
yeah,
and fucked them out, like, and they were all looking at me as if I was mad as fuck. But my plan was, I needed one of the rooms for her, and I walked in, and none of them fucking said boo. And I laid her down, and I said, lie you there. Now, I remember treating her nearly like a child, and I says to her, right, Sonia. And I handled it well. I was proud of myself, because the nerves, fucking pressure. Holy shit.
Only imagine.
Oh, fuck me. 120,000. And everybody at home, like, the world had stopped. Schools were watching it. Everybody was watching it. And she had a bag with her, and she had a book with her. And I said, no, you're going to do now. So I go and you lie down there, would you? See that bag? You put your head in that bag there and lie down. And, you know, if you want to read that book, read the book. And if you don't, just sleep. But I'll tell you, I'll be back for you when it's time to come back. And then I came back for her and took her out. She'd warmed up. And the rest is history, really, you know. And it was great to be part of that. It was unbelievable to be part of that, you know. And it was a big moment in Irish sport, you know.
Mm.
And, you know, you were coming out of Donegal, and this is where it brought you. And, you know, I didn't realise it was really the beginning of a journey for me. I thought that's it, because I had to promise Rosie I was never going to go away again. You know what I mean? I mean, I had to promise, that's it, now I'll not be going away to no more Olympics, I'll give all this up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that lasted a week or two. And then, you know, it was just so brilliant to be there, and fuck, that was it. But Sonia and Akka, and then you thought when she retired that it wouldn't work, and then David Gillick came along and won a couple of Europeans, and, you know, we did some good stuff at Worlds and Berlin, and then Derville came along, and different people, you know, I didn't see it coming, you know, but it came, mm-hmm. they came on scene, and now Irish athletics is in good old shape. I mean, there's a girl there, a Nigerian extraction, an Irish girl, Adeleke, and she's good, you know, she's really good. I mean, she's really good. I mean, she's top two or three in the world, you know. So, you know, there's all of that. So there was European medals cross country. There was there was a whole lot of stuff, you know. But I got, and the European Cups used to be brilliant because it was a team event, you know. And nobody before me could get all the athletes out. You know, everybody kind of suited themselves, and I don't know if I want to do that or not. But by fuck, I stayed on the case. I got them all. And then we got promoted up into the Division One and, you know, all that. And I used to love the team thing. And I used to do, you'll relate to this, I used to do team meetings, like, and they never had team meetings, like, with me, well, like me. And I used to go, like, up there and thinking, right, and I was driving this agenda in my head, like it was used when you were 9 or 10 or 11, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought it down to that, you know. And,
yes.
Ah, they fucking were bouncing, like, they were bouncing. And they never probably since or before that had that approach taken. You know, they all went, somebody probably came in and told them, right, you're in lane 4 and, you know, that's it. And we're starting at 5 o'clock and do-da-do-da-day. I was coming in fucking bouncing, like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I loved the team element of the European Cup. But, and it was all that. It was a busy life. It was a busy, busy life. You know, then, as I said to you earlier, Ryan, the centre came out of it all. And, you know, there's, and the other lovely, what I love about the Finn Valley Athletic Centre is, it's all the sports, for all sports, you know. There's rugby, there's soccer, there's Gaelic now too, there's the swimming, there's the hall, there's gymnastics, look, there's everything. You know, there was boxing. Jason Quigley came out of that hall, you know, and I helped him in his early career for a long, long time. Managed him, even when he went to LA, I was like, again, that contact. Mm-hmm. I was on the fucking phone every day over a couple of days. You know, even when he was homesick, I was talking to him. You know, it was like, It was natural. It was kind of natural for me to do that, so I was able to do it very, very easily. I fell into that kind of a slot with him, and although he was a different sport,
mm-hmm.
you know, so
yeah. Mm. You're just a natural mentor, then.
It was natural to me to do that and not let him down, you know, because if he needed somebody, he needed somebody, mm. you know, and if he needed to talk, he needed to talk. You know, if I got a call or a message from somebody, you'll always be sure I'll respond. I'll 100% respond. Some days, if I'm not sure of my answer, I might take a couple of hours. Now, only now do I do that. But in the old days, I was back like a shot. The minute it pinged, I pinged it back. But I never, if somebody wanted something or was asking something or was relating something, I always acknowledged back straight away. And I think that was important, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I operated.
Yeah. Reading your book,
mm-hmm.
Managing Ireland wasn't just plain sailing from what I took.
No, it wasn't plain sailing at a time. Well, it was plain. Managing Ireland was plain sailing.
Okay.
But dealing with the politics in Dublin wasn't plain sailing. And a new group came in that thought they were going to take over, you know. And they probably seen me as somebody. I'm only surmising this. They probably perceived me as a problem. And maybe I was. I'm not saying I wasn't. What kind of a problem was I? Anyway, I made a mistake. I referred to the woman that was the CEO in an email as a silly bitch. And you're not supposed to do that, seemingly. So basically, and I regret that, obviously, but it was just my normal chat, and we they did a troll of all my emails, come back into the office to the staff to catch me out. They wanted to get me out, and they.
Why do you think they wanted you out?
Well, they wanted me out because I probably was too much up on my toes. Wanted to change stuff. I wanted to bring in more professionalism. I wanted to bring in a performance plan, and I wanted to work. My whole thing was, like, we need to be able to support these athletes better. We need to be able to plan 6, 7, 8 years ahead. You know, you just can't fucking wake up in the morning, like, and all that. And that was one of the row. I'll go back to a different row in a minute. And that I had in the middle of the Sydney Games was very stressful. It was very stressful. The run into the Sydney Games was very stressful. The politics was serious, but anyway, I'll stay with this story. This was in the mid 2000s, 2006, 7 and 8 roundabout, and I was trying to set up, and they brought in a British head coach, a very experienced man that had been with the British team leading them in the Olympics for a lot, and I got on very well with him, and I knew that he was bringing value, and I was working with him, but they probably seen me I don't know. I can't speak for them and what they thought, but they wanted me out. That was fucking going nowhere.
Mm.
And then, right, so it all kicked off for me and the Silly Bits thing. And then they isolated me. They put out a statement to say that I was suspended from athletics for grievous something. The statement, if you read it in pure cold light of day, you'd think, now he's either stolen money or he's been messing with children or something. You know what I mean? If you didn't go into the story behind the story. And so I was on the outside looking in, but I was still part of the board and I wouldn't give up. And I still was a torture, like.
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually went on and on and on, but I kept going. I fucking kept going. And I kept going. Another fellow would probably say, fuck it, you know, but I didn't. And I kept going, and they kept undermining at every level and trying to isolate me. But I eventually took them. I'll tell you what, I'm sitting at Finn Valley one day and I get a phone call, and it's from a solicitor's office in Dublin. And I didn't, it's out of the blue. And another man who was watching all this, who was a very well-to-do fella, he was just a fan of athletics, but he was a very rich man. And he had employed solicitor to look about me. And my attitude to him was, Jesus, it's just only an old row, it'll sort itself out. He says, no, it's not an old row. They're out to screw you, like. So basically, I took them on. It went on and on and on. It ended up in the High Court. I looked on the basis of the statement that they put out about me. I went after them. That was my way back in. That was a bad mistake by them.
Mm-hmm.
But my mistake was the Silly Bits.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened was basically Ryan. It went to court. It went to the High Court. I did a settlement with Athletics Ireland, and with the whole lot of them. They had to apologise to me, they had to grovel to me and give me a letter and all the rest of it. And rather than, I could have just stuck it out and got a whole lot of money off them and do that, do today. And at the end up, I settled for 60,000. And I said to the boy when he was saying, settled with 60,000, says, I right, that's the settlement. I don't want the money. Give the money to Athletics Ireland. So it was never about money. It was about me staying. That was that row, and I won that battle. And to be honest, everyone that battled me, they're gone. They were gone. But Jesus, it was 2 years of fucking terrible, terrible life. You know, I did drink too much during that time.
When you say drink too much, like what is drinking too much?
Well, drinking too much to me was I had hangovers fucking every day. That's how drinking was. And I was down in the bar at Finn Valley. And I would sit there just, if anybody was happy enough to chat to me, and I would chat shite or whatever I was chatting about, I don't know. But it was a very stressful time in my life. And, you know, it took me a couple of hours every morning to get straightened up and get going again. And I was still very involved in athletics. I wasn't letting it interfere with anything. But it made my life very complicated and stressful. And it was a terrible time. But anyway, I won the battle, and I got there, and I justified myself, and everything that I was looking for, that the row began over, happened.
Mm-hmm.
The sports council all came in, you know, everybody supported me and basically said to you, McGonigal's right, like, that's the way it has to be. But anyway, these people had, I don't know what their agenda was, probably to put their own people into positions, and, you know, and that they probably seen me as a bit of a culture from Donegal, you know, and fuck, boy, you don't need to buy it from Donegal.
But
you know?
Me knowing the Patsy, I know that you're the man who you bought an oil. What was that place that you bought?
Factory,
the Disused Factory. And you built it into the best athletic club in Ireland. You were the best. You won the most medals on the race. You know what, Ryan, so it's like you have so much potential.
But they didn't see it.
Yeah.
See, I often say since the shooter came to Donegal and studied the situation, I wasn't just a culture from Donegal. Like,
yeah. But
they didn't see it.
Like you had me driving 40 minutes to train as a youngster. You know, your parents all like...
Absolutely, coming from everywhere. And they're still coming from West Donegal. Yeah. Still coming from everywhere. No, to be honest with you, that they should have studied themselves, you know, and I had too much... I was too political and had too much support, you know. I had big support and I had key support, key people, and they didn't really suss it out. No, they certainly were well-to-do people and all that, but they hadn't fought in the trenches the same as me, you know what I mean,
over the
years. And one of the disappointing aspects of that was the lack of support from Donegal, or the other Donegal clubs, and the county board and the Ulster Council. You know, you would have thought, I would have thought if it was reciprocal and somebody from some Donegal club was in this my position or in Ulster, I would have jumped up to defend them. But no, but basically, to be honest, there would have been so much resentment against me in Donegal even that they'd nearly been glad to get rid of me because I was too successful. You know, they just couldn't handle me. And that was very short-sighted, to be honest. You know, when you look at it now, sitting here in 2023, very short-sighted. I had some key people, surely, in Donegal that supported me, but my own people and one or two others, but no, I didn't. But I didn't, funny enough, they weren't big enough to fucking step up and say, that's not on, you know. No, they didn't. And that was disappointing, you know, because I formed the county board. I fucking formed it. It was me that set it up, got it going, drove it on in the early 70s. 71 with the board, 71 for the club. But when I was in Glenties, I set up the county board. But it's just life. And then the other thing that happened was I had a big row in Sydney. You know, the people back in Dublin wanted to pick the relay team, you know. So, damn, fuck off, like. How would you pick a fucking relay team when you're in Dublin?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
To
simplify the story, you know. And then, in fairness, I leaked. Oh, I really bollocked them then, because what I'd done was, I had a great working relationship, which is very important with all my life with the media. The local media had done great work for athletics, and then the national media were on board. And in Sydney, when the Hanlon got up about, first of all, picking the team, you know, I fought for the athletes who were fastest and best, in my opinion. And then there was others who had agendas, you know, for getting their own athletes in. And I remember the final, that's what you related to earlier, the final selectors meeting was so stressful. I came out of it. I got my way. I got the team. I got the girl that needed to be picked. She was from Limerick, this girl. And this Dublin crowd wanted a Dublin girl in. And I said, nah. Anyway, to make a long story short, I remember coming out and Rosalind was there that day because we were staying up, we were flying to Sydney the next day, and I remember opening the boot of the car and starting to cry. Oh, the fucking stress was terrible. And that kind of went on then through the thing. They took a high court case against me and the radio team and they lost it. And then what did they do? They sent me the hand delivered letters to me telling me this has to be the team. Now we were 6 weeks in fucking Sydney, like. So anybody that was running well 6 weeks ago, you don't know. There's six athletes and there's four of them to be on the team. And I says, I had an agreement with my lads. Listen, boys, and the women, we'll do a wee trial 3 or 4 days out and have the top four. That's the team. And then one girl, she said she was going home. She wouldn't go do the trial. I'll never forget it. And I said to her, we were in the village and she came up. Our coach, you see, was outside the village and he wanted to be a coach on the team, but I wouldn't let him. And she says to me, I'm not going to do the trial. Ah, I'll never forget my answer. And I was so happy that I was able to get myself together to give her this answer. I says, you know what? So that's grand. But you do know you'll be on a plane home tomorrow morning. So that fairly bucked her up. So she was there for the trial. Like, but I didn't sleep that night. Wonder what is she going to do? You know what I mean?
How did she get on then?
Oh, she fucking was the lead. She was the best. But you see, she was just acting bollocks.
Yes.
And that was it. But anyway, that's the way it works. But anyway, got me away. The team did well. The team broke the Irish record. Did grand. But look, that's the kind of shit. But that, you kind of nearly... In those days, you probably had to be able to fight those kind of battles, you know, to be able to remain, to remain in the situation. Because, you know, all right, I did that Olympics in Sydney. Nobody ever in history up to that had done more than one Olympics. I just presume that when you did one Olympics, you go back home and you don't come out again. Like, but I didn't see it like that. I didn't see it like that. So, you know, 16 years later, I'm still there. 17 years later, I'm still there. 18 years later, I'm still there. So, I mean, that was that story. But that was that story, you know.
You've had great athletes come out of Donegal.
No, I had
even Olympians in recent years.
I had even last Olympics, three athletes from Finn Valley, three or four athletes at last year's World Championships in Oregon from Finn Valley.
That's some achievement.
It is massive achievement. You know, probably in my early days, if I ever get one athlete from the club to the Olympics, I would be over the moon. You know, I can die happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get four World Championships, the same as Olympics. You know, yeah. I got three or four of that, and then three at this, and you know, I have people lined up to, you hope, be at the next Olympics. So it's, you know, but like that, you know.
Yeah. There's a fella I used to run with, Ian Ward.
Aye.
You talk about him in the book.
Mm.
Ian was very, very, very good.
Very talented.
Excellent.
Aye, very talented. Very, very talented. Oh, seriously talented. Very, very, very talented boy. A good junior. Your ambition with all your athletes is to make senior athletes out of them.
Mm.
Now, up until about 18, Ian was on top of it. And then maybe a bit beyond that, he kind of lost the desire a bit, you know, probably the interest, you know. But he was still able to perform.
Mm.
But he, you know, was going away from him at that stage, you know. But that was a great group.
Yeah.
That was a great group, you know. And Shane, God rest him, Shane Bonner, and there was yourself, and there was Aidan Connolly, and there was Darren McGlinchey. Am I missing anybody?
Park
McLaughlin.
You're younger than us.
Park McLaughlin.
We had a good team.
I had a good group.
Ian, like, you know, coming through the mid-teens, that man was unbeatable in the cross.
Jesus. You could do it in his own way too, you know. Yeah, he could.
I've actually reached out to him to ask him to come on, but he hasn't got back to me yet.
No.
I'd love to hear. I've never sat down with him and spoke to him about, like, you know, what was his mentality. Because Ian doesn't say too much, you know. But
no, he's quiet.
I would like to dig into.
And Simon, his older brother Simon, is very good as well. Very good. Both of them ran World Cross. Like,
they did.
And European Cross. You know, and Ian ran European track under 20 championships as well.
He did.
He spent a bit of time with the Kenyans over in Teddington, you know, and it didn't work though. But that was another great success story from Finn Valley was Ricky Sims.
Yes,
you know, I mean, Bolt was the biggest thing ever in sport, and he was the man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was lucky to be inside that track as well, you know.
So Ricky ran for Finn Valley. Where's he from?
Milford.
And Usain Bolt's
manager. And Mo Farah.
Yeah.
And that's
some achievement too.
And many others, I could, you know, the world elite athletes, you know. Mm. And he recently did me a favour to took on Mark English, you know.
Yeah.
And
Mark's flying.
He's flying. He's struggling a wee bit at the minute now, so I'll be anxious to see how he does at the Nationals. But yeah, he would hope to be in Paris as well, you know, it'd be his fourth Olympics.
Yes.
Third or fourth, whatever.
You're not a quitter. You know, I see you as a winner, and you know, you don't lie down. And in your book, you talk about there's times where you're in hospital.
Mm. Oh, aye, there was times I was in hospital. Well, the big story everybody remember about being in the hospital was it was for stents and heart job or something up at the Mater Hospital in Dublin. I only went up actually to get to one of them checkup things, but they reckon they're going to have to put a couple of stents in and this and that and the other, and that was grand. That was grand. Only the fucking championships were on that weekend, so fuck it, I couldn't be lined up in the Mater. So I'm in the intensive care unit first of all. Place, you know, it's a recovery unit, I suppose. It's a bit dramatic to say intensive care unit. But recovery unit and Highland rang me for an interview. So about the whole thing, so I'm lying there whispering down the fucking pillow with a phone because they didn't allow phones. So did my interview, and in the middle of it all, Charlie McCallum says to me, what are you whispering about? I says, for fuck's sake, Charlie Sherman, fucking intensive care, whatever you call this place, Mather Hospital. He started to fucking laugh, and I started to laugh, and then I got into bother with the nurses. But then it was getting into Friday, and I thought, I could be here over the weekend, miss the fucking race.
Mm-hmm.
And so I rang a fellow that ran for me and got medals at the National Seniors indeed in his day, PJ Swinney from Drumkeen. I knew he was in a course in Dublin, and I rang him and I said, are you in Dublin, sir? Aye. Are you going home on Friday? Aye. Jesus, you wouldn't give me a lift? Aye. I said, I'll be sitting on the step outside the Mather Hospital, sir, at 2 o'clock. And I gathered all up, sir. I gathered all up, put on the clothes, get out. I said, tell nobody. I knew they probably wouldn't let me.
Mm.
Set out the way I went, sir, and stepped the whole way home. And did the job. Sure, we won the bloody National Senior Men and the Junior Women and the Junior Boys that day. Gary Murray.
Yes.
And Simon Ward and, yes, and all those guys. So, you know, it was, I don't know what would drive you to do that, you know, but I done it anyway. So I couldn't perceive myself being there, you know, couldn't perceive it. So anyway.
Your success then, though, is it's not just in athletics. You've won, like, Donegal Person of the Year.
I have.
You've Freedom of Donegal, is it?
That's right.
And then Rehab of Donegal.
That was a big one.
Yeah.
Overall Rehab by 1 year. That's right. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that one now because I thought it was lined up for Jim McGuinness. But anyway, I got it, and some of the GA heads in the place weren't too happy, but you're what odds about them. But the reality is that the freedom of Donegal with Donegal County Council was a big win, you know, because there's only been about five or six in history, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you're on a list with the likes of
Packy and Seamus Coleman and Brian McInliffe from the World of Sport and Daniel O'Donnell and I can't remember, two or three others, but that's
fair play.
But you know, I seen that Ryan is a great profile for athletics. Mm-hmm. I didn't say it for myself. I seen it. That's good now that athletics can stand up and be something. And people, you forced people to acknowledge that, you know, and that was the achievement there, you know, those awards. It was athletics. This, you know, it was previous to this. There's always GAA or soccer or something. If it's going to be sport,
mm-hmm,
there's no way anybody would look at athletics because a minority sport in their mind that time. So for this fella to get that award in that situation, I thought that was good for the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it was good for me personally, but I just thought, right, this is profiling the sport. And then the other thing, you know, I know I got the awards and all that, and that was brilliant, but you know, the other thing that worked for me too was the getting on Highland, you know, being the voice of athletics and being able to tell the story, because nobody else is going to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
every fucking week, you know, it's a torture sometimes.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
But it's very important for the sport. Mm-hmm. You know, it's for the sport. And sometimes I might do that and miss out somebody, but you know, whatever. I've learned to live with that. But mm-hmm, the bottom line is, I'm on Highland doing sport for 30 years. You know, and you know, if you're living in Tubin and somebody's on the radio saying, "And Ryan McDade from Tubin was on this team," and everybody in Tubin puts their pecs up and says, "Jesus, they're all proud," you know. And that's good. Mm. So I did the media. I was the first man out on the media too. I used to do a weekly column in the local papers and all. Got the opportunity to do that for about 10, 15 years. That got the thing moving as well, you know. So I used to write a weekly column, and I'm very grateful to the man who was the editor, God rest him now, Sean Corn, Donegal News. But that was positive, you know. So it wasn't good enough just to be doing it. You need to be telling it. You need to be telling the story. And in fairness, I probably pushed my own profile too a lot of the time. But again, you know, I always thought, no, it's not really me. It's making people aware of athletics. All right, they associate me with athletics good enough. And you'd be surprised, you know. You know, you've made a niche in society in Donegal that didn't exist for somebody. And now it's all over. Like I have a schools program that I'm well happy. Mm. I'm really proud of. I related to it earlier, 80, 90 schools, you know, give an opportunity to thousands of youngsters every year. That's it. You know, that's gone on every year. I've carried that through. This is my 53rd year at that, you know. So, you know, I've done it every single year and I've developed relationships with teachers, you know, et cetera. So I'm hoping they can carry it on beyond me because it's the future.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. Patsy, like, I could chat to you all day.
Ah, sure.
There's so much to talk about, you know. If you were to be remembered, what would you like to be remembered for?
I'd like to be remembered for somebody that believed in my community, that believed in Donegal, that believed in people, you know, that believed in giving young ones an opportunity. Mm. I would like to think that that's the way they would perceive me and that I did my best to leave. Particularly, I have the history of Finn Valley, of course, 50 years plus now, but not only that, but a facility that's going to be there for years to come. Mm. and families and everybody can avail of it. Everybody can avail of it. It's not a blocked off place. So that's it.
Yep. Thank you very much, Patsy. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. I'm so grateful for the moment that I've had with you, and I have no doubt that your name will be remembered forever in athletics around Donegal.
Well, thank you very much, Ryan. I really appreciate it. You giving me the opportunity, and I wish you well with not only the podcast, but with your own life going forward as well, and your family. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Patsy. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I had so many more questions, you know, I wanted to ask Patsy, but this was the first video podcast that I had set up, and the iPad that was coordinating the cameras, the battery was running out in that, and it was only at 1%, so I had to cut it to that point, you know. But everything is perfect and meant to be, and I'm very grateful for the conversation that we've had. So I want to thank you for listening, and I also ask you to remember that you are the infinite creator.